Thanks for joining us on Chicago Tonight Latino Voices. I'm Joanna Hernandez. Here's what we're looking at. A proposal to demolish the Damon silos clears a key hurdle. We hear from local residents. Apps that connect temp workers with jobs are taking heat from labor advocates who say the apps break state laws. What a local charity is doing to reach its donation goal this holiday season.
When you take a look worldwide, butterflies have a significance in many cultures.
And local conservation efforts aimed at protecting monarch butterflies. And now to some of today's top stories. Amazon workers in Skokie and at locations across the country are on the picket line today. Workers at seven facilities went on strike today in an effort to pressure Amazon for labor agreement. The union says it's the largest strike against the company in U.S. history. Amazon says it did not expect the labor action to impact its operations, despite it coming during the busy holiday shopping season. The union hasn't said how many workers participated in the strike or how long the walkout would last. And residents in Pilsen are pushing back after the city approves a permit allowing a metal scrapping company to continue its operations. Alderman Byron Cicho Lopez joined environmental advocates today to criticize the Johnson administration for renewing the permit for Sims Metal this week. Neighbors have pushed back on the shredding company, saying it has a history of air pollution violations. Advocates today called for a fully funded Department of Environment and stricter policies for industrial companies.
We are here today to demand a moratorium on new and expanding metal shredding companies, facilities. Not next year, not tomorrow, right now. We cannot wait for another child to struggle to breathe. We will not wait for another life to be lost. We cannot afford to wait, and we will not be silent.
In a statement, Sims Metal says this approval is the right decision so that the critical work of recycling can continue in Chicago. The federal EPA has delivered our Pilsen facility a clean bill of health after extensive air monitoring, and we remain fully committed to continuing to achieve the city's operational expectations. And protesters demonstrated outside the Cook County State's Attorney's Office after charges were dropped against a suburban police officer a day before his trial was set to begin. Leaders from the Arab American community held a news conference to express their outrage over state's attorney Eileen O'Neill Burke's decision to dismiss charges against Oakland officer Patrick O'Donnell, citing insufficient evidence. The officer was accused of using excessive force during the arrest of a 17-year-old Palestinian boy during a traffic stop. And Mexican Foreign Secretary Juan Ramon is visiting Chicago today as part of his Midwest tour. He met with local leaders and organizations at the Mexican consulate to discuss ways to build relations between Mexico and the United States. With President-elect Donald Trump promising mass deportations, Ramon also met with immigration lawyers to listen to their concerns and proposals for the coming months. He says he wants to remind the undocumented community in Chicago that they are not alone. Chicago is home to one of the largest Mexican populations in the country. Up next, residents push back on a proposal to demolish the Damon silos.
Chicago Tonight, Latino Voices, is made possible in part by the support of these donors.
The Damon silos, a 15-story structure built in 1906 for grain storage, is one step closer to demolition. That comes as the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers approved a crucial permit needed for the city to consider the proposal. Matt Limited Partnership bought the 23rd-acre plot from the state back in 2022. At that time he purchased it, he said he planned to develop the site into a headquarters for his company. But local residents are pushing back on the development, while others are hoping to save the silos from demolition. Joining us now to talk more are Kate Eakin, president of the McKinley Park Development Council, and Ward Miller, Executive Director of Preservation Chicago. Now, we also invited owner Michael Tatum Jr. to join us. We received a statement from his spokesperson, which we'll get to in a moment. Well, thank you both for joining us. Now, Kate, I want to start with you. As I mentioned, the property was sold 2 years ago, but the owners have said there are no final plans for the development. What are your concerns with the development and public access in the area?
Well, our first concern is that there is no plan for development. The Tatums have repeatedly said that they don't know what they're going to do with it, and of course we don't believe that. You don't spend $6 million on a piece of property unless you have a plan for it. And this is an owner that has a history in our neighborhood. They also own the Matt Asphalt plant on Pershing Road, which is in the middle of a residential area, and we've had a lot of problems with that development, and it's equally opaque with what their plans are for the Damon silos.
So you believe they know, they're just trying to keep it secret?
I don't want to read minds. I don't want to try to read minds, but I believe that if they had something that was intended for the benefit of the community, that they would be willing to tell us.
And Ward, let's talk about the property. Can you briefly remind us about the significance of the silos that was built over 100 years ago? It was also the location when one of the Transformer movies was filmed, right?
That is correct.
I mean, when I'm passing the highway, I see it all the time.
Right. That's the most visible point of it, right? But it was designed by an engineer named John Metcalf in 1906, and they used a slip form of construction, which was a unique form of using concrete. And it was such a successful agricultural silo that he and his company continued to build silos across the world, extending all the way to Australia, with offices in like Buenos Aires and Sydney, Australia. So a really significant component of Chicago in our early agricultural history, which a lot of people sort of forget about, right?
And especially when you're driving past it every other day, maybe,
right,
for the average Chicagoan.
Right, and people ask what they are. And you know, so this was one of our Chicago 7 most endangered in 2023. And they're really significant. We'd like to see them landmark. We'd like to see some conservation, working with the community. And we have some ideas and visions. And we'd like to work with the owner, Mike Tatum, and the city and the park district towards a good outcome.
Have you ever communicated with Mike Tatum?
Yes, we have. And he's been actually very gracious, given us tours and is in contact with us. We haven't shared this sort of larger idea with them.
Now, I want to bring up the statement that Michael Tatum gave us. He said, "We have been committed to receiving input from various stakeholders in the community. As we stated from the start of this process, the Damon Silos is an iconic piece of Chicago history. We look forward to transforming the property for its future use." Kate, do you think the owner has been responsive to the community ideas?
He hasn't showed up to a single community meeting.
And what has those community meetings have been? What have they been like?
Absolutely. There was the meeting for the city permit, in which over 100 neighbors were present. And I hope that the city will handle the forthcoming permit process better than they handled it the first time. The first time around, they didn't come to hear community feedback. They came to tell us how they were going to demolish it, and they weren't expecting that many well-informed people to show up with ideas and really understanding the history with examples of things that have been done in other cities. And what we're really asking for is some creativity in the use of the process. There's a lot of things you can do with this property other than tear it down. It's an enormous piece of land, like I said, over 23 acres, and there's room to build something new there and to have something old. Our commitment is to secure public assets on the property, and that's really important to remember that this was public property. And in the way that the state sold it back in 22, they also took no public comment, no concern for the community whatsoever, and there were several other proposed projects in that bid and over the years that would have been great assets to our community.
What does that say to you?
It says that the state needs to change their process, and that's why at the time we actually lobbied for them to instead allow the city to conduct that process, because the city has a process that they were using for Invest Southwest and several other programs to take community input into account in the sale of public property, and the state hasn't done that.
And Ward, the statement also said they plan to demolish sometime early 2025, which it's around the corner. Is there enough time to make the case for preserving the silos? What would that look like?
We think so. We have a vision, and we've been working with Kate and her group and even the Chicago Park District in a preliminary fashion, as well as Blue Star Properties that runs the Salt Shed, which is also another landmark in a former industrial building on the Chicago River, the North Branch, and a very successful music venue. And the whole idea is to have a sort of a festival ground, but also have green space, a river walk, and a lot of public access to a great piece of property that really could bring more musical events to Chicago and not take over neighborhood parks and fence them off for weeks at a time, which is really bringing a lot of angst to communities. And of course, there's the wear and tear on these parks. Here we would have a solid place that's not in everybody's backyard and would be specifically sort of working together to bring these festivals and concerts to this site.
Ward, would you say the reality is, I mean, they own the property, so they can do what they want?
They can do what they want, but Mr. Tayden has shared with us that, you know, this he could consider a sale of the property. He'd like to sell it to one particular entity. So we're working to sort of fulfill that idea and working with the community and several of these city and private organizations.
And you talked about ideas. You talk about Salt Shed. Kate, I want to talk more specifically about that. What other ideas do you see happening there?
Yeah, so I would point out that Blue Star was one of the bidders when the property was sold by the state, and they're the only ones who submitted any qualitative analysis of what they intended to do on the site. And we were really pleased to see that they were looking at sports venues and gathering spaces. Gathering spaces are something our neighbors really want to see on the river, and they're a big part of our community's plan for our riverfront that was published back in June. So we were really pleased to see somebody come in and propose something that was appropriate to our Latino majority.
Well, thank you both. We'll have to see what happens next.
Thank you.
We'll be here for an update.
We'll be here for an update, of course. Thank you. Up next, why smartphone apps for temp workers have labor advocates worried. For years, people have accused Uber and Lyft of breaking labor law, with the companies saying they're just technology platforms, not taxi services. Now there's a new group of apps using a similar model. They connect temporary workers with companies, but they say they're not temp staffing agencies, just tech companies. Our Nick Blumberg joins us now with more. Now, Nick, we see apps popping up all the times. How do these apps work?
Well, ultimately, these work the same way as a staffing agency does. They perform the same function. They connect temp workers with companies looking to hire laborers, but not as full-time staff. Now, they just do it via smartphone apps rather than a staffing company where laborers have to show up in person at the office in order to get placed at a company. Because these companies say they're just a tech platform, they haven't registered with the state of Illinois as a temp agency, which the law requires. Now, registration might sound kind of simple, but worker advocates say it's actually really important to protect laborers from shady fly-by-night operations that just close up shop and leave temporary workers in the lurch. Since these apps haven't registered, the Chicago Workers Collaborative filed a series of complaints with the state labor department. That department granted the collaborative the right to sue several of these companies, which the group says it's planning to do. The organization's attorney told me the idea that these apps aren't operating as temp staffing agencies is just a sham.
And what do these companies that make these apps have to say?
Well, none of the companies responded to our requests for an interview, but we obtained their responses to the state labor department. One of them, Variable, wrote that there's a stark difference between its app and traditional staffing agencies. Now, the company says, quote, individuals that use Variable's platform decide when, where, and how long they want to work and at what pay rate, and they bid to work on the operations that Variable's business customers post on the platform. Now, in a post on its blog aimed at attracting those business customers, the company writes that, quote, many companies invest a lot of resources and money to maintain a large force of hourly workers, often becoming a barrier for a company to grow with little to no added value. Now, despite describing itself as a technology platform, Variable's website does list 42 regional offices around the U.S. The company raised a reported $32 million in funding in 2021. And Joanna, another one of the apps the Workers Collaborative reported to the State Labor Department has a reported valuation of $2 billion. So a lot of money at play
here. A lot of money. And why would you say that worker advocates are so concerned about these apps?
Well, the registration requirements, the other state laws related to temps, the laws that the workers Workers Collaborative says these app companies are violating. They're put in place to protect what's really a pretty vulnerable group of workers. Estimates of temps in Illinois range from 200,000 to more than 600,000 workers annually. But a UIC study found they earn just 50 to 67% of what direct hires make. They're also injured on the job at higher rates. And Black and Latino workers are overrepresented in the pool of temps. One study found Black workers face discrimination over the stereotype that Latino workers are harder working. Two labor experts I spoke with said these temp staffing agencies raise a lot of concerns and that they view the apps as just trying to get around labor and employment laws.
This is really interesting just to see how these new apps are popping up and these new policies. Remember when we didn't have any apps?
No kidding. Back in the dark ages.
Well, thank you, Nick, for that report.
Thanks, Joanna.
And you can read Nick's full story on our website. That's WTTW.com/news. For many, the holiday season is a time for giving back. However, some charities say they're seeing less donations this year. According to a Giving USA report, charitable giving dropped more than 2% in 2023. But local organizations are making efforts to reach their donation goals just in time for the new year. Joining us on Zoom is Major Kendall Matthews, Associate Chicago Area Commander for the Salvation Army. Thank you for joining us. Now, I want to start off. Tell us about the challenges the Salvation Army is facing this year with donations.
Well, the challenges right now that we're faced with is that we're seeing not the same amount of people who gave last year this year. And so we're just seeing a slight decline in financial donations and with our coats and with our toys. And but we still believe that there's still time available for people to give and for people to support the work of the Salvation Army because of our history and our heritage of serving people throughout this area.
Are you surprised with seeing that decline?
Well, you know, not necessarily, because I think people today are, you know, they're keeping their coats longer. They are, you know, items that they would normally donate. They're holding on to those items just a little bit longer. And we see that they are just not giving as they have before. And it could be because of economics. It could be several factors, generational giving. It could be several factors why. But we're not at such a decline where we're at DEFCON 3. Because the community is still supporting the work of the Salvation Army.
And Matthews, we know the Salvation Army in Elgin says they've seen a decrease in toy donations. Are you seeing that same impact in other communities?
We are. Here in the Chicagoland area, we've had to put out several pleas to the community about toys and about giving items so that children will have gifts under the tree. And so far, moving forward, we're seeing several of our sites throughout Chicago are seeing an increase, but we're meeting the need. And whether or not it's an increase or a decrease, long as the need is being met, we feel like the work is being accomplished for the disenfranchised and for the people in our community.
So you're saying you're being hopeful. And as we know, around the holidays, the Salvation Army relies heavily on the Red Kettle campaign to raise money needed throughout the year. What's been the challenges for the campaign this year?
Well, the challenges for the campaign pretty much has been getting people to give a little bit more and reminding people that, you know, 83 cents out of every dollar goes towards direct services. I think the challenges can be met as long as people know the percentage of which that they're giving. 83 cents out of every dollar, you can't get too much bang or blessing for your buck, and people need to be aware of that. So we want people to know if they gave $20 last year and they can get $10 this year, 83 cents out of every dollar goes towards direct services.
And Matthews, we also know the Salvation Army is known to have the bell ringers right outside the stores collecting donations. It seems there has been less of them outside. Why is that?
Well, you know, we've just had a difficult time really hiring and getting in more volunteers. So many times people who ring the bells are volunteers. People are volunteering in other areas right now, packing food boxes and donating toys and riding on our truck serving food. So people are finding different ways to give, either through the Red Kettle or through the mail appeal. And I got to tell you that I tell people that what goes in the bucket is the income, but the outcome of the income is food, shelter, and clothing.
And I want to leave us on a happy note. What can people do to help this holiday season?
Well, salarmychicago.org is one of the websites that you can go to. Or when, you know, we got 4 days left with our bell ringing. If you see someone ringing the bell or a kettle, drop a dollar in, drop $2 in, because, you know, those dollars add up at the end of the day. And those dollars help us to provide soup, soap, and salvation.
And I have a final question here, because what I find interesting, you kind of mentioned about, do you see a difference in generational giving when it comes to donations and volunteers?
I really do. I think that, you know, right now, people want to donate their time and their talent. They may not have much treasure as they had year before. And this generation, I think, is saying, let me give my time. Let me give my talent. And, you know, the treasure may not come right away. But school teachers and music teachers and social workers and counselors and people at the local churches, the time and the talent is just as good as the treasure. And this generation understands that very well.
Well, thank you. I hope you reach your donation goal. Thank you for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Up next, efforts to protect Illinois state insect. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is pushing for monarch butterflies to gain a federally protected status. It comes as local residents have been making moves to conserve the species, which is the Illinois state insect, for years. Population assessments show monarch butterflies have declined by nearly 60% from 2023 to 2024. And these unique pollinators are an important part of the local ecosystem with deep culture connections in the Mexican community.
They are an insect pollinator, and most people think about pollination in conjunction with honeybees and bumblebees because they are so very important to our food crops. However, butterflies can be very important to our wildflower populations.
Brookfield Zoo works with the Illinois Monarch Project to help protect the insect's population through educational services, conservation efforts, and meeting goals to plant native milkweed for the butterflies to eat and lay eggs on. Manager of Interpretive Programs, Andre Copeland, emphasizes the ecological and cultural importance of monarchs.
When you take a look worldwide, butterflies have a significance in many cultures. They are related to our dreams, going from one realm to another. Sometimes they can be signals from our loved ones that are in the hereafter coming back to give us certain messages. Here in Illinois, they have a special significance because in 1975, a group of school children in Decatur lobbied successfully to have the monarch butterfly considered our state insect. And in 2017, milkweed was adopted as the Illinois state wildflower. So these animals can have an intrinsic value, but they can also have a value that's really rooted in our literature and our spirituality.
Monarch butterflies migrate each fall from the northern border of Canada all the way down to Mexico and then move back north to states like Illinois in the spring and summer. Pilsen resident Claudia Galeo Sanchez of Mujeres por Espacios Verdes has dedicated her time and home to the preservation of butterflies.
I have Leoncito, my son, he's 7, my daughter Claudita, she's 10. They transform me as a human. It's so sad for me thinking that one day I won't be with them anymore. So while I'm alive, I wanna keep planting as many trees, as many plants as I can, because I wanna come back as a butterfly and I will be with them forever.
Galeo Sanchez has transformed her home into a butterfly sanctuary, complete with the large collection of the pollinators displayed in her living room. For her, they are a sign of liberation.
The butterflies can cross the border anytime they need to, because they need to migrate south and then they need to migrate north. They don't require a passport. They don't require papers to cross borders. It's something that makes me feel so painful, because humans, we are not free to do that. We don't have the wings to go and visit our family in Mexico.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service are looking to add the monarch butterfly to its endangered species list. Advocates hope the designation will turn around the insect's declining population due to habitat loss, insecticides, and climate change.
We've seen before with some of our conservation successes, when you have concerned citizens, as well as organizations and government agencies all working together, you can have a dramatic turnaround. And we have two animals here at Brookfield Zoo Chicago that symbolize conservation success. See our American bison, as well as the bald eagle. These are two animals whose populations were really, really low. But when everybody worked together in this nation, we saw conservation success. Those populations rebound to the point where they're stable. And this is why I'm hopeful and confident that we can do it again with the monarch butterfly.
The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service is accepting public comments on its proposal to list monarch butterflies as an endangered species now through March 12th. There's more information on our website, including what you can do to help the monarch. Now, the monarch butterflies are one of my favorite insects. There's a beautiful forest sanctuary in Mexico. And that's our show for... We leave you tonight with a special holiday event at Nathan Hill Elementary School. Now, from all of us here at Chicago Tonight, I'm Joanna Hernandez. Thank you for watching. Stay healthy and safe. Buenas noches.
Closed captioning is made possible by Robert A. Clifford and Clifford Law Offices, a Chicago personal injury and wrongful death firm that is proud to give back to its community in Chicago and beyond.